Radio Santa Cruz on February 21st at 6 o'clock here at the Tannery Art Bar and Cafe. And I would like you to all show up. It'd be easy. Just come over to Tannery Park, find where the little restaurant is. It's right on River Street. It's 1060 River Street, actually. And don't forget to stop in before that.
Hi, this is Mauro and the Tangerine Dream Team. 101.1 FM, Santa Cruz, free and wild radio preserve, because baby guitars need a place to play.
Shh, over here. No, no, not there. Over at the radio. This is Rising Moon. Don't turn me up or a big nasty corporation might block my message. Listen to
Small World Radio.
Tuesday from 9 to 10 p.m. on Freak Radio Santa Cruz 101.3. Over.
Commander.
Yes, come in, number one. Sit down.
I understand we're under a planetary emergency. Is this about that?
Yes, number one. Central Command at Small World Radio has ordered us to the safest possible location and to begin transmitting the truth to the agents of love around the world. Apparently, everyone is being activated and are prepared to save the world.
Yes, sir, Commander. Shall we broadcast on our pirate transmitter at Freak Radio 101.3 in Santa Cruz?
Precisely, number one. And throw the switch on worldwide internet.
Smallworldradio.net. Got it.
Listen, number one. This isn't going to be easy. It's the heaviest task anyone is ever going to ask of you.
Just name it, Commander. The future of humanity is at stake.
Precisely, number one. Before you sound the alarm, I want you to calm yourself. Find your center and pull up your feminine side. Now take a deep breath. We're going in.
Today on the program, I am interviewing two fellows. One is Mauro Oliveira, and the other is Jim Ostrowski. They are both scientists in their own rights and artists, and they're interested in what's happened with Fukushima and some of the radiation problems. They're also going to be talking about what happens when you protest and the cause you believe in. and I'll be introducing them soon. And stay tuned. This is the Tangerine Dream Team Show. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Coral Reef on the Tangerine Dream Team Show. And in the studio, I am happy to introduce Jim Ostrowski. Jim, say something. Jim is an electrical engineer.
I'm an electrical specialist. I'm an artist. I work with small components to make working devices. And I work with my friend, Dr. Burl Payne, who's been doing that for a generation longer than I have, and so it's like kind of like a fun thing to do. One of my cherished dreams in life is to have a mentor that I could bounce out ideas off, and I work with Burl in that capacity.
Thank you, Jim. And on the phone is Mauro Oliveira, who I'd like to introduce as having written the song we just heard. And he's an activist and a writer, a radio show creator, video producer. He's a reporter and graphic artist. Hi, Mauro.
Hey, Coral. Hey, Jim. Good to be with you guys.
Hey, it's good that you called up. We want to examine some of the latest scientific data that's been collected about what's happening on our planet, and talk about some recent activities that you've had and experiences you've had with the legal system, or at least law enforcement. And also, what strikes your fancy? I mean, what's hitting you hardest right now? Is it that the Earth is needing, to be
We need you have this great show that came. It's going to be coming on airing tonight, and it's talking about how you feel about how you are fighting still because you feel for your children growing up. So anyway, I'd like both of you to just kind of I don't know. I have some questions.
Answer.
All right. Yeah, I'd like
discuss
to
discuss this stuff.
Yeah, if we get a little background about you, Mauro, this interesting combination of activism and reporting is fascinating to me. Your background is apparently about the environment, and I hope you know we have something in common here because I'm really concerned about the environment since we've experienced this Fukushima meltdown. Is there anything you do have to do with that that alarming event?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd just like to start the show with saying that right now, as we speak, there's pilot whales beaching in the Keys on the Fort Myers side of Florida. There's an unknown cause behind this event, and we've been monitoring it all day. For Treetop Environmental News and, of course, our radio show. But, yeah, back to Fukushima. We just did a test on a salmon that was given to us by the Wintu Indians, and we sent the salmon up to Wyoming where it was tested for the cesium-137 and the strontium-90 isotopes.
Yeah.
And the lab took an interest in what we were doing, so they actually did some tests on their own dime. And it took a month to get it back, but we're happy to report that the salmon in California, at least the one that was tested, appears to have no none of the migratory radioactive isotopes that are known from Fukushima. Potassium was present in the fish, but that's pretty normal. It's a radioactive potassium.
Sure.
So, but, you know, unlike the migratory fish, it looks like what the U.S. government is saying about our salmon anyway might be true, and that we can still continue to eat the salmon.
Yeah.
What
concerns me is this stuff, the ability of, we know for sure there's an entirely contaminated prefecture, I guess that is similar to a state in the United States. It's about the size of New Jersey, I guess. Prefecture of Fukushima in Japan has been totally contaminated. You can't eat any of the food that comes out of there. Yet we're not testing any of the imports, or let's say, from Japan's point of view, the exports that are coming over here. Now that, you know, they grow beef cattle for sure over there. There might be processing plants. Fukushima was at least was a big city where there's definitely some food exports going on. And well, at the same time, we're also worried about the fish that are in the vicinity of Fukushima, whether or not they're being caught and used for food, or used as shipment of food. So, you know, it's great that you guys were able to test and find a good tuna.
Salmon.
The tuna are radioactive. The migratory tuna are.
Yeah.
Radioactive. And the seaweed, seaweeds off the coast of British Columbia and the northern west coast has, U.S. west coast has turned up with isotopes. Off of Fukushima, they've caught rockfish and other fish that are just so far off the scale that 100 times safe levels of Japanese safe level.
Yeah.
Now, the U.S. safe level of contamination, radioactive contamination, is higher by 10.
Mm-hmm.
than the Japanese safe standard. So the Japanese are exporting food, and there's videotape of Fukushima farmers complaining to their politicians that they are ashamed of growing food and exporting food that they themselves refuse to eat.
Really?
And they consider it a dishonor to be farmers right now.
Yeah.
And that's, you can see that on YouTube. I follow a guy who has the Fukushima diary. He is a Fukushima worker from the power plant, and he checks all the stories going out that's in the mainstream news, and he catches the hoaxes. But overall, he's saying, man, it's a mess. It's getting worse. There's steam venting from Reactor 3.
Yeah.
still. And he's also saying that there is radioactive water showing up in the port of Fukushima that appears to be coming out of the underground, out of the ground underneath the ocean. Water. Yeah, so it's actually going under the ocean and then coming up out of the bedrock in the ocean.
Mm.
And plus, we also know they're dumping about 300 tons of radioactive water a day.
Yeah.
Because they can no longer store.
Yeah.
The radioactive water. This is going to go on for another 100 years.
Yeah. You know, okay. Now, what concerns me and a few other people that I've discussed this with here in Santa Cruz is what became of the plutonium that was in the reactors that obviously got dispersed, and they're being right on the coastline there. I think from what I've read, reports of the U.S. aircraft carrier Ronald Reagan in the immediate days after the initial accident, but before the explosions, the Ronald Reagan got dosed with particulate matter, which later turned out to be plutonium. Now, I've heard all these things for all the tests they've done for cesium-137 and iodine-131 and all these different combinations of elements. But what I don't hear, in fact, it's like the word plutonium is like a key word. If we say that word, somebody's going to be monitoring us, okay? So we should really probably call it something else. At any rate, we've got this P word stuff that's in the ocean. And what became of it? And are there any bottom feeders that are eating it? And what became of the plutonium that dosed the Ronald Reagan? That went into the sea, and that was, from what I understand, 100 miles away. It was 100 miles away from Fukushima when the crew members are reporting the various kinds of tumors and cancers that they're getting.
Yeah, there's 71 seamen that are in a class action lawsuit, and they're adding sailors every day.
Yeah.
To that, from the Ronald Reagan, because as you know, when you join the military, you sign away your right to sue the military for their blundering.
Yeah.
And the U.S. Ronald Reagan was into their I don't know if it's a desalinization, but they take ocean water and then they prepare it for the use in the ship, including drinking water. And they did not filter for that. They were not even monitoring for radioactivity. Had they even had one dosimeter on board, they would have known. I'm sure they had them on board. They were not monitoring, but they would have known that they were hot. And they were tasting the familiar metallic taste of radioactive particles in their mouth, because they had a heat wave come over the ship. And it snowed radioactivity on them.
Whoa.
And they were tasting it in their lips and mouths. Mm-hmm. And so they're turning around to sue TEPCO because that's all they got now.
Yeah.
When really, the real blunder there was the United States military.
No kidding.
And for putting them there, the plutonium that you're referring to is from the MOX fuel rods.
Right.
They're highly experimental, highly dangerous. They should never have been brought into reality.
Mm-hmm.
They're basically atomic weapons that are being used for fuels, and they were, you know, many scientists that were aware of the MOX fuel experiments were stifled and censored.
Mm-hmm.
But the MOX fuel rods, one rod is, they say, has enough radioactivity to lethally kill. To kill 2 billion people.
Yeah,
one rod, 2 billion people. So what are we doing? You know, and look at General Electric. This is who it is. General Electric's little program.
Mm-hmm.
General Electric is also involved in the tar sands. General Electric builds nuclear weapons. You go out and buy a General Electric appliance, you're contributing to the problem.
Exactly. Yeah. So now tell me, how does your prison activities cause you to... to become interested in this Fukushima question? Are you a reporter on this this as well? It seems you're knowledgeable enough to know your stuff. What's really going on? How does your line of work here coincide or have to do with Fukushima and those?
I'm monitoring. I'm doing my best.
Yeah.
Monitor the entire world's environmental catastrophes and what I call planetary emergencies. I'm the producer of Treetop Environmental News, which is a news distribution service. So we scour the planet every day for the news stories, and then we collect the news stories and we republish them as they are. So we don't rewrite anything.
Yeah,
we just take, like, from the Environmental News Network, ENN. We pick up a story there, we grab it, we post it on Treetop Environmental News on Facebook, and then we go on looking. And so we hope that we're catching all these things that are happening. So we're monitoring not only Fukushima, we're monitoring ocean acidification, the the scientists in the Arctic that have declared a planetary emergency, the Arctic sea ice blog, the Antarctic blogs, and, you know, of course, in Florida, with the rivers are dying. There's a flesh-eating bacteria disease. We're monitoring all that. We're working with the River Warriors out of South Florida. But we get more involved in that, too. We're not only a distribution service, but we're also activists. And we get on the front lines. We do a lot of graphics for these different groups to help them get their PR out. We, you know, actually go head-to-head with the governor of Florida with their problems. With the tar sands, we went up and actually were part of the convoy blockade that happened last
Yeah, could you tell us a little more about that, unless Jim has another question?
Well, I just wanted to make sure everybody gets, you know, get caught up with you on the internet there. Do we have a website, or what do you recommend we look for?
On Facebook, we need people to become aware and like and share Treetop Environmental News. It's four different words, Treetop Environmental News. And that's put out by the Trinidad Tree Sitters, also on Facebook. And if you can friend them, you'll learn a lot about tree sitting. They actually are making a weekly broadcast of the world's environmental headlines. And they are also producers, along co-producers with me, and they produce the news distribution. My other website that I'd like people to know about is smallworldradio.net. And that, too, is a lot of rebroadcasting, but some of the shows we make ourselves. And then if you want to see all the projects that we're working on, we're in and out of court with Sierra Pacific Industries, fighting clear cutting. And so if you want to see all our projects, it's SOL, like Signal of Love, communications.org, soulcommunications.org, and all our projects are listed there.
Okay.
And you can click from there to any number of things we're doing. The song that you first played, America, that was when we were running a supply line out of Los Angeles to Big Mountain, and keeping those elders who were resisting a relocation from a coal area to where their ancestors were. You know, it was a strip mine. They were basically devouring the surface of the earth and moving natives along its path. And we were helping those natives resist that, of which they successfully have now for over 40 years.
Wow.
And they were being moved to radioactive land in the beginning. Site of the world's largest radioactive spill, which happened in Church Rock, and it was buried by President Carter, of all people.
Wow.
He buried that thing. He buried the publicity on it. It was 100 million gallons of radioactive liquid that was spilled over the deserts of the Four Corners. And then they began moving natives there, and over 4,000 of them died in just a few years of cancer.
No.
And so we were fighting that, and that's the first time I ever picked up a Geiger counter. We used to have the natives would take us to really hot spots. I mean, places where the Geiger counters weren't clicking anymore. They were singing. All full on. We found yellow cake, processed uranium, as well as mining sites that were abandoned and never cleaned up.
So they moved
and we're still doing that work today. We're still out there with Geiger counters, dosimeters. Eureka just got a blast the other day of a radioactive cloud that we assume came from Fukushima. But there's also two missing rods over in Humboldt County from the Humboldt reactor that is shut down. And we're still looking for that.
Now, some people... Go ahead.
Yeah, so I'm just saying that, you know, the Geiger counter is always with us, and dosimeters, and we're always trying to, you know, make people aware. We got our school over here to just buy a Geiger counter, and we're trying to get our fire department to get one, and it's something everybody needs to be doing now with Fukushima. And Tom Hartman, as you know, on the Tom Hartman show, he's now doing radioactive numbers across the country every day.
Wow, mm-hmm. Really?
And this is a huge boost for awareness, because mm-hmm. that's just below mainstream media right there.
When you say he's doing radioactive numbers, what is he taking readings of? In particular samples, or just the air, you know, background radiation in the air?
Air background. They're using RadNet, and like Chico, California's normal background is like 30 to 36,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not real familiar on which Rentgens, which one they're using, but
Rads, Rentgens, and RIMS, and all that. Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and you know, I've never been really
understanding
of all that, but they're getting highs of up to 56. Detroit, Michigan is getting highs up over 100.
Yeah.
Colorado is getting hit really hard. They have been since the beginning of this. The jet stream.
Well, they're higher in altitude. Now they're you're going to get you're going to get higher readings, like in Denver, places that are high up. What situation you could possibly put yourself in as far as background would be a frequent flyer or an airline pilot or stewardess.
Right.
Or, you know, you're up at 30,000 feet and you're getting all the radiation that would normally have been blocked by the atmosphere.
So Tom Hartman, he's doing the peaks. So he's saying, okay, like Chico's 36 to a high of 52.
Yeah.
So he's just trying to bring it out that, hey, these numbers are going up, folks.
Yeah.
And Jim, you're doing some tests locally, aren't you? And some alpha wave testing.
We're concerned about Burl and I, when I say we are concerned about the levels for surfing and fishing and all the outdoor activities that take place near where we live here in Santa Cruz. And we had a look at New Brighton Beach. I took a sample from New Brighton. And a little bit south of there is Seacliff, the next park over. And we found a marked difference because Seacliff Beach, they get their sand from more directly from the ocean currents. I found a higher level of radioactivity in the sample taken from there rather than at New Brighton Beach, which is out of the main ocean current, outside the main ocean current. And so that we can get a handle on where this radiation might be coming from. Once we study the currents and see which currents their point of origin is in Japan, we can get an idea of how bad the seafloor is getting. If the seafloor starts getting contaminated, you have all the bottom feeding little critters, the shrimp, and then the other creatures that live down there, that gets up in the food chain and that gets concentrated and eventually it gets into our food supply over here. Now, it could get, it's already, I'm sure, really bad over in Japan. I'm not sure what they're doing with their seafood, but we're concerned that they're actually going to start, if they haven't already, shipping their seafood over here to the United States. And, you know, so those.
You know what?
Some of the things we've been concerned about.
What else can be happening is this is an excellent scenario for the darker forces of government to dump their waste.
Yeah.
I mean, they can hide. Now they have a signature in the Pacific where Russia now can take a shipload of nuclear waste and just dump it. Or any other nation that has a problem with their low-level and high-level radioactive waste, they're like, wow, we can just dump it over there because no one's going to know the difference now.
Yeah.
We have to watch for that.
Okay.
Did you find that there was any cause for alarm for breathing some of the air in Santa Cruz that you tested for the atmospheric background?
No. I would say that the background levels are within normal limits. For a while immediately after the Fukushima accident, we had a big rainstorm that occurred, I think, 3 or 4 days after the explosions. And we did have an increase at that time. And that would have been cause for alarm had that continued. But after about 3 or 4 weeks, that subsided. And I don't think there is a problem as yet. I'm not saying there isn't one. I wouldn't worry about the background atmospheric. I think we should concentrate on what might possibly be getting into the food chain.
Now, with the lack of rain, is that also entering into this? Is there some connection because there's no rain?
You mean as far as it affecting the weather?
No. What do both of you think about this unprecedented weather system that's going on?
Well, I think we had a similar thing happen in 1976, 77. It's too early to tell just from one odd, season where we're not getting any rain. It does feel unusual based on our limited experience. But the weather, we can't really tell anything definite. We know it. The weather might affect the amount of dust in the air, and that might be a concern. If there's a fallout, a physical fallout that occurs because of all the nuclear fuel that might have been dumped into the atmosphere, it might be an area of concern. But our detectors aren't detecting. I'm concerned basically about the what happened to all this plutonium.
And Marl, you got feelings on that?
I know that the drought that we're in now surpasses anything in recorded history of California. We just surpassed it, and NOAA is saying we're looking at late March, maybe even April, before we have significant precipitation. So that means that we're passing this record mark with all this open-ended in front of us that just spells out a deepening record.
What do you think is causing it?
Well, what I believe is causing it is the ice collapse that happened from 2007 to 2013. And 2012 was the lowest ice ever in Homo sapiens existence.
Mm-hmm.
And that record beat the 2007 record by 5 weeks.
Wow.
The record of 2007, which was the lowest to the point, we hit that record in 2012 on August 1st with 5 more weeks of melting. So just like this drought, we set such a distance on this record from the previous that there is something going on.
Do you think there's a relationship between the events at Fukushima and the drought?
The events at Fukushima, no, I don't believe are related to the drought. But I think the conditions have to be looked at differently because rain does wash the air.
Yeah.
And without rain, I think this radioactivity is probably getting a more evenly distribution across the northern hemisphere's atmosphere, mm-hmm. where before we could be depending on this time of year to be cleaning the radiation over the Pacific, which isn't that great for the ocean, and it certainly isn't great for people in the islands.
Yeah.
But it would have been better for the West Coast had we been having a normal winter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in terms of the radiation part, yeah. And then
we're in so uncharted territory in everything. With the weather, with the ice, with the ocean currents, with this radioactivity, and basically humanity went right back to sleep. Mm-hmm. As soon as Fox News turned off the news on Fukushima, everybody went back to sleep. We should be tearing our nuclear power plants apart.
Yeah. Yeah, especially the ones that were built after the model of Fukushima. I mean, what do they call them, boiling water reactors. That's the kind that exploded at Fukushima. There's 23 of those exact same configuration of reactors in cooling systems and what have you in the United States now. They should have been shut down immediately for retooling or whatever it needs to be done. I'm concerned that there might be some elements of what they call terrorism, or let's say sabotage. We don't know that the people that designed them weren't terrorists themselves, but it's very possible that we're looking at possibly an act of sabotage where the one theory I've heard is that the actual tsunami. And you might want to look at this. You want to look at jimstonefreelance.com. where he postulates or theorizes that the tsunami itself was caused by a weapon that was placed at the base of the Japan Trench, where the pressure of the ocean is greatest. And it's the same theory that's used for dam busting, what they called in World War II dam busting. You put a explosive charge at the base of the dam, and that will cause the dam to crack, whereas if it's higher up in the ocean, there's not as much pressure. The bomb goes off, and it dissipates more or less harmlessly. Well, if you put a weapon down low enough into the ocean, deep enough, you'll you'd be able to create a tsunami. It's possible this is man-made. A man-made event, made on purpose, just for the purposes of, let's say, government terrorism. You know, they want to terrify the people and make them slaves to their reactive to their schemes.
Interesting that you should be bringing this up. We have a nuclear submarine. I can't remember if the USS San Francisco.
Yeah.
Anyway, we have a highly experimental scalar machine similar to the HAARP technology that's mounted on the front of this submarine, and she just got her front end blown apart.
Really?
And yeah, and it happened right there, right around the time of Fukushima, the tsunami. And news of this is just starting to leak out, but it appears that something malfunctioned on the ship and blew the front end of the ship apart.
Wow.
So, she could have been placing that weapon, or she could have been trying to hold the weapon while she was using it.
Hmm. No kidding. Whoa. So, yeah, there's all kinds of avenues we need to investigate here, and I think what it's going to take, we're not getting any information from the government. They won't tell us whether or not our food is being, tainted or contaminated. And this is going to have to be a citizen project. So I've taken it on myself to get my own Geiger counter. One of my friends has gotten a Geiger counter and we're going to work together and see what we can do to figure out what's really going on. I think we need to look deeper than, you know, just the background radiation, because even though that might be some kind of indication, what we're really concerned about is this stuff somehow and very plausibly getting into the food chain. And that's something we have to, you know, be on our tippy toes for, you know.
I've seen YouTube's Geiger counter videos of people opening up tuna cans, and as soon as they get inside, the levels go up from the background level like 10 points.
No kidding. When they open the tuna can.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really frightening news. Yeah. Because what you would want to look for is what they call alpha. Alpha is supposedly a low level of radiation. In other words, the particles are big and slow rather than small and fast. But the big and slow ones, those are coming those would be the nuclear fuel, the plutonium and the mixed oxides.
And the low radiation also is insidious.
It is.
More so than getting radiation burns.
Yeah, these things imitate, particularly plutonium, that imitates the signature of iron in your body, from what I understand. You'd have to be a physiologist to really be up on this, but what I've heard from listening to Tom Hartman and others who have physiologist guests on, our concern is that these elements like strontium and a lot of other things, the body assimilates, thinking, you know, this looks like strontium, looks like calcium. Let's have some of this, and we'll put it over here. Plutonium would be the same particulate signature as iron. So whatever the body does with iron will also do with plutonium. In other words, put it in the part of the body where it thinks it needs it.
Okay, guys, I would like you to rest your voices. I have a little bit of a show that Morrow is going to be hearing tonight. Right. Or we're going to be hearing from Morrow. Let's see. It's not playing.
Okay. What are we looking for?
Well,
what are we going to hear?
There you go.
Emergency, because the Arctic ice has collapsed 50 years earlier than models predicted due to temperature increases that have led to massive methane expulsions. Now 2 billion people are at risk of starvation in the Northern Hemisphere from drought. Methane expulsions are being fueled by deforestation, the third leading cause of man-made greenhouse gas emissions. California's tolerance of clear-cutting has become an insane act in light of the global consequences of catastrophic climate change. We need every forest and every tree to stabilize the climate and our children's future. America's youth have begun climbing into the timber barrens' trees to guard them with their lives. They hold the moral high ground, and they need our support. Clearcutters are destroying California's forests and the hopes of future generations. The Board of Forestry wasn't listening. Are you?
That's the first part of the Small World Radio program. What's it entitled, Marl?
That was called "Are You Listening?"
Okay.
Which I know we all wonder that with our own shows. Is anyone listening?
Yeah, that's true. So we're hoping just by talking that people will listen, and yeah.
That's been one of my biggest frustrations over the years. Is you know. The news I deliver keeps getting worse. and the people that I hang with are, you know, I'm a sun dancer, and I'm involved in a lot of ceremony.
Yeah.
And everybody's praying. Everybody's praying that things will get better. But yet, you know, prayer didn't stop the Native Americans from coming to the brink of total annihilation, and I can't think of anybody who prays better than Natives. and prayer certainly didn't help, you know, little Catholic boys from getting raped by their priests. So at one point, you got to admit that prayer just isn't the end all. It's just the level of intent of how desperate you are. When you're really praying, you're in tears and you're really feeling that close connection to the Creator. But unless you're actually out there stopping that convoy or willing to put yourself in jail, maybe not so much to make a point, but to screw something up that's going to screw up your children's future, and then I don't really know
that
prayer is going to be an effective tool at all.
Okay, Jim, give us your take.
Here's the thing. You know, we've gotten so used to having what they call a justice system, and it sounded to me maybe a little bit there, Mauro, that you were, you mentioned having things going to court. For certain, after you were arrested, you had some kind of a courtroom proceeding where they accused you of something, and then somehow you wound up either paying a fine, doing community service, or maybe spent some time in jail. You would think the first stop from where you were for what you were doing, let's say you were conducting a protest, or occupying a tree, you know, holding your ground for whatever reason, you probably didn't have much of a chance to, at least in the courtroom setting, to say what your cause was. Everybody that goes to court has a cause. The sheriff who arrested you, his cause was that he thought that you were trespassing or on somebody's property, or blocking access of people who had the property unlawfully. So his cause was the law that's saying that, you know, you're not supposed to interfere with other people's
rights
to conduct business.
Yeah.
Could you?
Okay, now your cause, that's only half of it. Your cause is so much more important than brief interruptions of commerce, yet we have a justice system so that no matter what the case, puts the commercial interests in there first rather than being secondary to human interest and human survival. And the first thing that judge should have considered was the importance of the two causes, the cause of interfering with commerce and the cause of the world is in danger. Okay, those two causes, that if they were presented properly, yet the very first stop we make into a courtroom, there's usually some kind of a basement court where it's all about traffic and people, you know, not, you know, making a complete stop at a stop sign or made an illegal U-turn. These are very, you know, trivial little things that usually don't involve harm to anyone. Yet we find that, you know, whether that when you're going into this situation, we have a system where supposedly you have three branches of government that are stand as a triangle, and they're like have all these checks and balances, and you don't have the judiciary, or shouldn't have the judiciary, following every little dictate of the legislative. You should have some kind of an opposition there. Where no, what we have are all these people united against for commercial interests against human interests, and that's the first thing I bring up when I'm in court is that, you know, I want to know if somehow these judges are beholden in any way to make decisions that just go along with whatever the legislature happens to pass. My most recent run-in was with, I'm taking care of a couple of animals up in the park, and that necessarily, you know, I occupy some space doing that. The rangers were concerned that I was not occupying a space that was off-limits somehow. There are no signs, but they gave me a ticket for that, but I think I'm not sure what happened. I called up to see what was the status of this, where when I was supposed to show up for a hearing. They never turned in the citation because I believe that they, you know, they probably figured it wasn't worth their time because they're in a big rush down there in the basement court. That's all about commerce and all that kind of activity, and they don't want to be bothered with somebody with a cause. So
no. Hey. How's that correlate, Mauro?
Well, my courtroom experience is. Let me put it in context. I've been in court three times with the nonprofit, and those were accumulated impacts of clear cutting. And I live in the same county that the largest landowner in California lives. He owns 2 million acres. His name is Red Emerson. He owns Sierra Pacific. And he's the world's largest clear cutter. And we sued Cal Fire for allowing him to clear cut based on a little change they made in the definition of what a watershed was. Years ago, a watershed was the primary river at the bottom of a shed, and all the tributaries were tributaries to that watershed. Now, the timber industry has managed to change the legal definition of watershed to be every tributary is its own watershed. And when you can clear cut an area to a certain intensity per watershed, you can do a hell of a lot more if every tributary is a watershed. Mm. And after 5 years, they can actually come back and cut between the clear cuts, and essentially, on the 11th year, you have no forest.
Yeah.
And so we were suing over this. Our arguments took hours and hours and hours of you know, data, pictures, statistics. And then the state rests its case in 8 minutes.
Really?
And they say, and with their head down, they say to the judge, "Yes, Your Honor, we know it looks bad, but it's legal."
Hmm.
That's it.
That's
and
it.
The judge has to walk out of the room and consider everything we said, and then look at the law. And yeah, it is legal.
Well,
because they've manipulated all the foundation of the law, and they've literally gutted the spirit of the Forest Preservation Act and the California Environmental Quality Act, CEQA.
Yeah.
There's two things to law, as you know.
Yeah.
One of them is the words, and then the other is the spirit of the law. And they used to be able to say, wow, you know, today we have a conflict between the spirit of the law and this fucking loophole.
Yeah.
That the words say, so we're going to go with the spirit of the law. But they don't do that anymore.
No, they don't. Yeah.
And so we lost all those cases. But the Center for Biological Diversity, that has 100 lawyers, they had 11 judges recluse themselves in my county.
Hmm.
because every single judge has dinner with Red Emerson, the head of Sierra Pacific.
Oh, no.
Or he contributes to their
that figures.
Yeah. So there's that. Now what I just went to court for, and I spent 3 days in jail, was I was over at the tree sit, and we were working that action over there, and the Umatilla Indians had called for help because they had locked down to a tar sands convoy of this giant 300-foot General Electric piece of equipment that was going to take a tar sands operation from 6,000 barrels a day to 30,000 barrels a day.
Yeah.
And this giant convoy was crossing Oregon, and it had already been, and I'm going to use the word loosely, attacked by activists 5 times.
No kidding.
Where they locked down to it and stopped it. And the Umatilla Indians stopped it for 2 hours, long enough for a snowstorm, a vicious one, to come and hold that for 7 days.
Wow.
So they actually stopped that thing for 7 days. And it costs tens of thousands of dollars a day when that thing isn't moving. It costs tens of thousands of dollars a day when it is moving.
Wow.
So it can only go 40 miles a day at the top speed, and they can only travel from 8 p.m. at night to 6 a.m. in the morning because they take up the whole road. They have to literally take the lights off and drop telephone wires in corners to get this thing around corners. So Omega Morgan, the company that is moving this for General Electric, 1,000 miles up until Alberta, they were denied permits by all the native tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Because the native tribes are siding with the native tribes in Alberta that are saying, we can't have this tar sand. The scientists all over the world, as you know, including Jim Hansen, have said, if we start up the tar sands operation, we will bury humanity in greenhouse gas.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there because my daughter said, hey, Dad, I'm going. You with me? Okay, so we get in the car and we take off to help the Umatilla.
Yeah.
Indians, because one of them had gotten beaten, a woman, was roughed up and beaten around during her arrest while they actually locked this thing down.
Wow.
So we responded to the plea for help. And when we got up there, I was off the side of the road, my vehicle still running, off the road completely, where anybody could park, and I was standing by my car. And the state trooper, first one, comes by and says, what are you doing here? There's a flare next to me, but I have nothing to do with it. I didn't put it there. I didn't light it. I had nothing to do with that flare.
Yeah.
But I was far enough ahead, 200 feet ahead of where these brave women had locked themselves into the road in what's called a dragon device.
Yeah.
And I had nothing to do with that. I wasn't even privy to what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
All I knew is that my daughter was somewhere in the vicinity, and I wanted to make sure that no car came speeding down this road and hurt anybody.
Right.
So I was standing by my car, and I was going to wave a slow signal to anybody approaching. Well, the first person who approaches was an officer.
Okay.
Normally, he would take over my job.
Yeah.
Or he would get somebody to take over my job. And so he goes, what are you doing? And I said, I'm making sure that those people back there aren't hurt. And I pointed behind me into the darkness.
Yeah.
And into a situation, like I said, I wasn't even privy to what it was. And so that officer had the correct response. He goes, okay. And he goes speeding off.
Okay.
The second state trooper, he pulls up. He doesn't ask me what I'm doing. He says, turn around, put your hands behind your back as he's getting out of his vehicle. I completely complied. Now, remember, I'm off the road completely.
Yeah.
And as he's handcuffing me, he goes, I'm not arresting you. I'm just trying to figure out what's going on. Instead of asking me what was going on.
Uh-huh.
So I said, you're clearly arresting me. And then as he's patting me down, he's coming up to my left pocket, not over my heart, the other side.
Yeah.
And, it is over my heart. Yeah, my left pocket. And he says, I know I have my memo recorder in there.
Right.
Because I've always got my memo recorder on.
Okay.
Whenever something's going on, I turn on my memo recorder so I can remember what I just said.
Right on.
So, but I'm not thinking about that when he first approaches me, because he says, turn around, get your hands behind your back.
Yeah.
And he begins arresting me. The last thing on my mind is what I got in my pocket.
Okay.
But when he gets to that pocket, I remember because I'm thinking, God, I hope he doesn't find a pocket knife or something.
Yeah.
You know, and then he gets right about to touch that pocket. I go, there's a recorder in that pocket.
Yeah.
And he says, is it on? I said, yeah. He goes, now you're under arrest.
Huh. Oh, God, really?
Okay, so I'm in jail for 3 days. I'm in jail for 3 days.
Uh-huh.
And when they go to arraign me, all the jailers thought, you guys will be out in the morning.
Yeah.
They treated us great. By the way, the Grant County jailers are wonderful people.
Yeah.
There's no jail like it.
Okay.
And so 3 days later, I go to my arraignment. I got 5 other charges.
Wow.
Disorderly conduct, which I told you everything that happened. The officer told me when I got out of the vehicle, he said, I have no grievance with you.
Yeah.
That's how well we treated each other.
Uh-huh.
I blessed him. He could hear me praying for his family all the way. I complied with everything he told me to do. So there was no disorderly. And my second charge, which carries a year, is that I had my hand in the lockdown device in cement 200 feet away from where he arrested me. So charge one and charge two conflict with each other by 200 feet and have me doing two things that are physically impossible to be happening at the same time.
Well,
because he has my hands in handcuffs. How can they be in cement?
You're right. I see.
So I'm wondering where they're going with this.
Yeah.
And they didn't have the balls to charge me with what they arrested me for.
Right.
They charged me with interception of communications.
Now, which communications was those?
Exactly. they charged me with that phrase, but they mean he had a memo recorder turned on in his pocket.
Oh, is that what that phrase means?
That's how they're using it, because they don't have the balls to say it in the newspaper to make themselves look as stupid as they're going to look in the courtroom if it actually goes that far.
Yeah. All right, so have you had an arraignment yet, an arraignment appearance? Like, was that
yeah,
your arraignment?
Yeah, I was arraigned. I have 6 charges that carry up to 2 years.
So now what's the next step would be some kind of a pretrial, right? I mean, what's going to happen next with that?
The pretrial, my attorney, by the way, there were 16 of us arrested, 15 of us charged. They let my daughter go.
Okay.
Because they had men roughing her up. No woman touched her.
Okay.
All the other women that were arrested that were of age,
mm-hmm.
were handled by women.
Right.
My daughter, who was underage, was roughed up by men, and
uh-huh.
and then the sheriff himself drove my daughter to where he thought he was going to jail.
Yeah.
But he had to divert halfway when he found out she was a juvie.
Mm.
But before he diverted, he said to her, and this is on his recorder in the vehicle, "I hope you get tar sands in your eyes."
Oh.
So they botched that so bad that they pulled me out of my jail cell with this wonderful woman named Cindy, who handles juvenile arrests in Grant County, and she said, "Hey, we love your daughter. She doesn't belong here. We're going to drive her anywhere you want."
Yeah.
And she was released without any charges.
Yeah. Are you able to get any of these hearings and appearances on video? I mean, there's a prevalence,
They confiscated everything.
They confiscated
everything. They arrested
every
single person they could get their hands on.
Okay. That's the next thing is like hopefully getting videos of these proceedings. I mean, they're obviously going for secret proceedings now where, you know, there's hardly ever even a court stenographer there.
Oh, it gets better.
Yeah.
My hearing was by video. They didn't drag me to the courtroom. They let me sit in a chair, and there was a camera on me, and I was able to see the courtroom.
Okay.
And there was when it came to my bail, they said some guy who works for the DA, it wasn't the DA himself, he said, "You know, Your Honor, we can't just release these guys on their OR. They've cost us so much money
really?
That we can't let them go."
Mm-hmm.
Like this, I'm asking for $10,000 bail on each one of them, and the judge, a woman, agreed.
Really?
Yet there's 3 statutes in Oregon law that deny bail to be based upon what it costs a municipality. It can only be based upon my flight risk, which is what it's all about. And they did not interview me or any of the other 15. They didn't even interview us for flight risk.
Yeah.
I own a home. I own my property outright clear. I have four kids. I sit on a school board. I'm chief executive officer of a nonprofit that does these things regularly.
Yeah.
I have never been arrested to where I was a flight risk. I have never been a flight risk. Yeah. I haven't even had a ticket
yeah.
in the last decade. So when we went back to court the other day, when our attorney went back to court, Laura Reagan, she demanded the bail back.
Yeah.
And the DA had the balls to say, well, I'll think about that, about returning the bail after the third megalode goes through Oregon unobstructed.
Oh, wow.
So they're holding bail over us based on what somebody else might do.
No kidding. Yeah.
So all this is illegal, and our lawyer informed the judge that she was out of line and that she would be taking it to the Supreme Court of Oregon, and that's already in the works.
Mm.
But they don't care. They're willing to arrest us, do an illegal arrest. They're willing to do bail illegally. They don't care. They're more interested in that big Omega Morgan Corporation that's going to be moving all kinds of big equipment over the next decade up to this horrible situation in Alberta. And another one of my charges said that I had no moral conviction for what I did, like I was some street punk.
Up there just causing trouble.
There was no moral conviction for what I did. Yet James Hansen and 400 others were arrested on the White House lawn over the same damn thing.
Yeah.
Is that really a charge? Would they say that?
It's a descriptive part of one of my charges, is disorderly conduct. That I'm up there just causing trouble.
Yeah.
In zero degree weather.
Mm-hmm. And what do all your co-defendants want to do? Do they want any of the charges dropped or kept?
I can't really speak for them. And as far as I know, everybody just wants to be left alone so they can continue their First Amendment rights. Personally, I really would like them to convict me on the recording charge.
Yes. And then what were you saying you wanted to do after they convict you?
Well, the problem with their conviction is that this has already been tried in Illinois. The Illinois police arrested somebody. 11 states say it's illegal to record a police officer. And these are all new. This is only in the last 2 to 3 years. These states have come up pretty much because of the Occupy movement and said, hey, you can't record us. Yeah. Where would we be with Rodney King? Yeah. Where would we be with Grant? And everybody else has been murdered by police. And this guy in L.A., these guys in L.A. who just got off yesterday for beating to death Thomas Atwell or something like that.
Yeah.
And who is heard pleading. And the cops saying, hey, you see my fist? I'm going to use this to beat you to a pulp. That's all on recorded tape. It didn't help because those cops just walked.
Yeah.
But where would we be without that? We wouldn't know just how fucked up the cops are.
Really.
So, you know, the 11 states say that you can't record a police officer yet, but how many of them actually taken it to court? One.
What about the idea?
Illinois.
What about the idea of a press pass? Do they still, as I recall, now this is years ago, record and videotape things that were going on, and you would have also the right to appear in court to ask to videotape, the judge to videotape the proceedings if you had a press pass that was issued by the Highway Patrol. Is there anybody among you that has a press pass?
I have press passes for me and all my family because of our radio show.
Yeah.
But we weren't there in that capacity, although the Supreme Court has already ruled that during a newsworthy event, anybody can be cloaked with the freedom of press because there's not always a journalist there when there's an event.
Yeah.
So anybody recording an event that is newsworthy becomes temporary press and is covered. But the law actually says, because the appellate court of Illinois, they took the police's case where they actually convicted a man of recording them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he took it to the appellate level, and the appellate level threw it down and said, this man is to be set free because unless he is obstructing the safety of the officer or the safety of the public, he is allowed to record a cop no matter what he's doing if he's on duty.
Right.
So it's been dealt with at that level, and then the police lost $65,000 because then it became an illegal arrest.
Yeah.
And he won his $65,000. Well, the police didn't want to pay that, so they took it to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, no way, Jose. We're not hearing that one. And the, pardon me for the for the slip there. That's racist, what I just said, and I didn't mean it.
No. Okay. Don't.
But anyway, the Supreme Court said, we agree with the appellate court, so we're not even going to hear your case. So the Supreme Court agrees with me with what I'm saying about my arrest, because, one, I did not interfere with the safety of that officer. He didn't even know I was recording him. He already had me in handcuffs.
Uh-huh.
And, two, I was the only public there.
Yeah.
There was nobody else around when I was arrested. So what public did I endanger standing off the side of the road leaning against my car?
Well, thank you for this helpful discussion. It's like now I know why I carry a recorder and what I should say, that I'm going to be covering a newsworthy, you know, our conversation might be a newsworthy event. And so that's why I'm recording you, Mr. Officer Ranger, whoever you are.
You can record them anyway.
I'm sorry?
I've been recording police for years.
Have you? All right.
And I've even pointed the microphone, a unidirectional mic, towards police when they're sitting there conspiring to pull something on the public.
Yeah.
Unless they can get out of the way of my recording, they have no right to not be recorded.
Right. Well, go ahead.
Is it true that the police and the state troopers are acting on behalf of the big corporations and less so to serve and protect the citizens that are there needing some kind of?
Oh my God! They were protecting Omega Morgan's transfer of that stuff. They dragged the activists that were locked down. They dragged them across the road, still in their lockdown devices. They were attached to a trailer. They dragged the trailer.
Do you mean they made them walk, or they literally?
No, they dragged them.
That should have been
they dragged
video.
Women. Yeah, they confiscated all the videos. They grabbed everything and everybody, and so they weren't protecting the safety of the public at all, because the public was the ones that they were trying to move.
You do,
and normally what they do is they very carefully disassemble a lockdown device.
Uh-huh.
To make sure nobody gets hurt.
You do have witnesses to that fact.
Oh, there's plenty of witnesses to it, yeah. Over there where the lockdown and all that was happening, there was people around. And some of the footage is in the hands of the attorney.
Okay. Yeah, that's good. Got some.
Yeah.
You know, witnesses have something to do with this. Could be a
but
class
But what's
action.
Important to know is that Omega Morgan went through these towns in the weeks before those convoys began to travel. They went through and they had barbecues for the police department. They put money in the off-duty fund. They made sure that everybody had what they wanted. They're spending billions of dollars just moving the equipment.
Right. Uh-huh. I feel very sympathetic to what you're enduring. And it won't be over very soon. It'll be kind of like another few months of this, and then more of the same,
I'm on extradition papers. So basically, I cannot act up. I cannot get in trouble. I'm not allowed anywhere around Omega Morgan. I can't get into any trouble because I'm on bail. And instead of giving me a speedy trial, they've delayed the next hearing until July.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have a lawyer that is either helping you or going along with this, or what is your opinion of the lawyer that you have, what do you think about him or her?
The lawyer that we have is the chief executive officer of the civil legal firm that handles these kind of affairs worldwide.
Uh-huh.
And she was the lawyer immediately for everybody, pro bono.
Mm-hmm.
And she's prepared to take, like I said, she's going to the Supreme Court of Oregon. She's prepared to go all the way, as far as they want to go, to avoid precedent setting that will affect an activist anywhere in the country.
Mm-hmm.
She will leave no stone unturned, and she's already proven that by attacking the bail.
Yeah, that's good.
And let me also mention, too, and I want to thank Rising Tide and Greenpeace mm-hmm. and all the other groups. When we were arraigned and we were in the process, now we could be released once we were arraigned.
Yeah.
Bail had to be made. $17,000 was raised in 4 hours.
Wow.
And Greenpeace threw $5,000 at us. Rising Tide threw $4,000 at us. Anonymous donors, $4,000, $5,000. My car was impounded. It was $800. All I had to do was go to Western Union, put my name in, and there was the money.
Wow.
My hotel, gas, food. We were so well taken care of because people across this country won't stand for this.
Yeah.
They won't stand for the tar sand, so they're not going to stand for anybody who's got the courage to stand up against it.
Yeah.
To get hurt.
Yeah.
And what kind of local press have you gotten up there where you live?
Well, John Day, the town of John Day, was very hostile. One of the guys, and I wasn't involved, like I said, I wasn't involved in the direct action. And I was on the side of the street because they were bringing, at this one other point, there had been some attempted lockdown earlier in the evening. But now that this big device had hit the center of town, in this little town, it was like the 4th of July. Everybody turned out at 11 at night to see this big machine go around the corner of the town, the main street corner. So I was standing there because I was like, how are they going to do it? I was amazed at the technology of moving this big giant whale across Oregon because they had to literally dismantle the corner.
What does this thing do again? It pumps water or what? What does it do?
Yeah, it's a water, they call it a purifier.
Oh, yeah.
But it just increases capacity. So I was standing there and one guy said, hey, man, we're going to beat the shit out of you guys.
Yeah.
And he actually said, fuck you to me.
Yeah.
And my daughter's standing there.
Wow.
And then he walks up to the sheriff and talks to him. And then from that point on, he's on my shoulder.
No kidding.
He won't. I step one way, he steps with me. And I ask him, are you covering me? He's like, fuck you.
Hmm.
So this is that town, and when I talked to the sheriff, when they were letting me out of jail, the sheriff came over and shook my hand.
Yeah.
And telling me how nice my daughter is.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Kissing my butt.
Sure.
And I told him, I said, hey, who is the guy who's swearing?
Yeah.
Who is the guy who swore in front of all those elder ladies and my daughter? Who is the guy with the horrible mouth in your town? He goes, oh, I don't know who that was. I said, he was either one of you, or he was your nephew, because he walked right up to you and you guys had a very intimate conversation in the middle of the road.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the guy who impounded my car, the guy who actually pulled it up on the tow truck, he hugged me when it was over. He knocked $200 off the bill.
Yeah.
God.
Wow.
And he hugged me.
That's
and he said,
remarkable.
Don't judge us all by what happened to you, he said.
Yeah.
Well, would you consider doing this kind of protest again, or you have to wait, don't you? You can't even think about it. You can't even go there.
I can think about it.
Yeah.
And I will support any protest in any capacity I can that keeps me at a legally safe distance. Mm-hmm. I can do graphics. I can do jail support.
Mm-hmm.
I can drive you to... I can't get within 1,000 feet, but I can get within 1,001 feet.
Yeah.
So there's where my line is.
There you go.
1,001 feet. But I'm game. I want to know what it is. If there's something to be done, tell me what it is, and then it's what is the value of the action?
Yeah.
Is it worth me sitting in jail? There are some things worth going to jail for.
For sure. Yeah.
And our children's future is one of them. I have four kids, and I will give my life if it comes to that. If there's something out there that is going to make the difference,
mm-hmm.
because right now it doesn't look very good.
So yeah, how can you answer what you feel is really happening, Jim? Because you
I think you know Mauro's story is remarkable. I think you know you deserve a lot of credit, Mauro, for what you're doing, and I'm amazed and surprised to hear that you've gotten this kind of support. I mean, a lot of times we look and there's so many people that, like you say, want to go to sleep as soon as they hear, you know, the Fukushima this or that. Oh, it's all fine. You know, it's all taken care of. They go back to sleep, and you know, I'm excited, or let's say it's, I'm happy to hear that there are at least some people that are keeping track of what you're doing and are willing to jump in there and help. I mean, you know, and if I were you, I wouldn't give up on praying, you know. It's like, you know, but it takes...
Oh, I don't.
Yeah.
I will give up on that.
Yeah, you know, it sometimes, gosh, it's remarkable. I've been through some unhappy and difficult times. And it always works out for me when I, you know, say a prayer or two. It'll be sometime down the road. It won't be immediately, but I'll get the answer, and I'll be encouraged, you know. So
my wife and I believe that our prayers have brought us our children, our home,
yeah,
everything. And you know, I wasn't knocking prayer in the least. I was just saying that we've been taught throughout history that prayer includes action.
Oh, for sure.
A prayer with no action.
Yeah, and that's what I think, you know, that's some of the issues I've been having recently with, like, the church thing. I can't get myself to walk into a door of a church because I know it's almost a waste of time because, you know, those people don't have, all the message they hear from the pulpit is, you know, about having faith and you know, getting through the day and overcoming this or that situation at home. You know, nothing that relates to me or any of my concerns about the world and my grandchildren and what kind of world they're going to inherit. So, you know, it's like it's almost like there's nothing there for me, but there's still my relationship with God, you know. And
hallelujah.
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 You know, I was in Eureka when the priest was killed in the church.
Yeah.
On New Year's
Day.
Did
you hear about that, Jim?
No, I didn't hear about that.
And, yeah, we...
New Year's.
My daughters were up in the tree, and that was such a dark night, New Year's night.
I was trying
to find a safe place to sleep.
Yeah?
And I came across an intersection where if I had gone right, I could have gone to the trailhead where I could be close to my daughters.
Yeah.
And I was in my van with my dog. And the entire intersection got completely black. It was like a fog. And the only thing I could do was just shoot through that and get to the other side. And when I got to the other side, there was a friend in need sitting on the sidewalk, someone I knew that is a tree sitter.
Yeah.
A woman, and she was in need at 11 at night. And it was a good thing I got there, and I took her to a safe place.
Good.
She was disorientated, and she was being affected by what I was being affected by.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hit that intersection, I saw my body being thrown into the woods.
Wow.
Where I had planned on going to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And the next day, when I did get to the trailhead, I walked in to take a pee up the trail a little bit, and right where I saw my body thrown into the woods, there was a dead deer carcass with no meat on it, just a skeleton.
Wow.
And then I went with my friend Jack, who's a very spiritual Taoist. He's 81 years old. He's been part of all these tree sits for decades. We went into Eureka and had coffee where we normally do, and we set up our Wi-Fi and began to work.
Mm-hmm.
I began to work on Treetop Environmental News and scour the world for news stories. And it was New Year's Day, and stepped out into the street to make a call, because it was loud. And I looked to my left, and there were hundreds of people in the road.
Oh.
And what had happened was, they were all around the church, because the church was a crime scene.
Wow.
And the priest had been bludgeoned to death. Wow. And I know he was praying when he was killed.
For sure. I didn't hear anything about this. What happened? Why did this occur?
The police picked up this transient alcoholic drunk guy,
yeah,
90 miles south of Eureka,
uh-huh,
on New Year's Eve about noon.
Yeah.
And he was agitated, kind of being violent. The police picked him up. They took him to jail.
Yeah.
He was too difficult to handle in jail, so they took him to a psychiatric hospital.
Okay.
He became too difficult there, and they had to restrain him.
Yeah.
And so they took him back to jail. But this time they drove him 90 miles north to Eureka.
Okay.
They held him in jail there for a little while, decided he was okay to let out. On New Year's night, they let him out at midnight.
Mm. Just let him loose in the street.
They let him out right by the church.
Oh, no.
The guard at the church calls the police about 2 hours later and said, there's somebody trying to break into the church. The police show up again, and they see the guy that they've already arrested 2-3 times that day.
Wow.
And driven there. They took him out of his home at Redway, drove him to a foreign town, Eureka, where they let him go.
Mm.
And they now they catch him trying to break into the church, and they tell him, you know what, it's pretty busy tonight. Why don't you just go sleep in the homeless shelter down the road? And they pointed in the direction of the shelter, and then they drove away.
Yeah.
He went into the church and beat the priest to death.
Oh.
There's your police at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, we had a murder here after a fellow was let out of a psychiatric facility and then taken from San Francisco down to Santa Cruz, and he was in the homeless center. I mean, the shelter the night before. He murdered this woman, a business owner, on the street, and just ravagely stabbed her, and that was last year.
Yeah, I remember something like that. Yeah.
We were all shocked about how that could have happened, but... Mm. He was in custody right before this. Why weren't people concerned about his state of being? I'm sure he had no clue that he was in, doing what he was doing in Santa Cruz, or he might have, but he's out of his territory. And I'm not speaking for him. I'm saying that. It's interesting that the ball gets dropped a lot and things happen, and we wonder how that could happen.
it's kind of, for me, it goes back to the fact that the whole system has got its priorities out of whack. And, they don't, it seems like none of these folks realize what, why there are three branches of government, and it brings back what I was saying at the beginning of our discussion here, is that you don't have the checks and balances. They're all in cahoots to make more money, and they're
checks and balances.
And they have to be called on this. I mean, that's the first thing you want out on the floor is like, do you believe? Ask the judge. Do you think that every little jot and ink stroke of legislation should be just taken as law? And just find out what they have to say about that. And when you have your jury selection, ask them, what is the function of a three executive, judicial, and legislative branch government? Why even bother to have those three branches unless they're going to look carefully at the law itself, and rather than just the simple facts of the case? It would seem to me that if, like, our local courtrooms was where you could get justice, you'd have the poor people all swarming the place because they're thirsty for justice. And it's just not happening.
No, it's not. Only two judges are in courtroom scenes I've witnessed, and instead of three deciding on specific cases, and there's a legal... I didn't go to that... explanation of that, but I'm told when you appeal that you always get three judges and not two.
Yeah, and that's because three people will get usually have a different opinion or slightly different, and
right,
they can talk about it between themselves. Where the system now is that the lawyers, when they question the potential jurors, the judge will direct that they only select people who are willing to follow the so-called law, in quotes, the law being anything that, you know, these people that we've, you know, it seems like we've gotten used to having a system where we're paying legislators to go to Sacramento and sit there day in and day out and think of new laws to pass. I was accused of violating a law against inclusive of all these things. I'm, you know, basically feeding cats in the park. But there is a law against molesting animals, harming them, trying to trap them. In the same sentence, it looks like they added with the word processor, feeding. So along with all the, you know, molesting of animals, you shouldn't feed them either. Well, you know, that's something that, you know, that's like they're, they must have entered this with the word processor just to have something else to, something they could actually complain about. People have been going in the park for, I don't know, how many centuries, retired folks like such as myself, feeding pigeons, feeding squirrels, you know, somehow when it comes to feeding cats or anything like that, feeding these animals is now illegal. Okay,
some people are morally incapable of not feeding an animal.
I think, yeah. So, you know, it seems like we've gotten way overboard with this idea of the police officers having to follow the so-called law when they should be capable of making judgments on their own as what's right. The first thing you want to ask yourself, or they should ask themselves, is our potential suspect here hurting anybody? And if so, is there a reason for it? You know, is there a likely offense here in some way? And we see there's no sense of scale. The police have lost their whole sense of the idea of scale of offense. You know, while you know, yeah, blocking an intersection may have some, you know, temporary commercial detriment, by far the reasons that you folks are doing what you're doing is to prevent a far greater crime from occurring. You know, as that is raping the land and laying waste to the whole sections of public land. I mean, supposedly, you know, I don't know how anybody can control millions of acres, you know, on their own. But apparently, you know, if you have the right connections, you could have the connections with the bank that can, you know, loan any amount of money they want now just by making a bookkeeping entry, and they're with no risk to themselves. You know, so we have basically something that would be an entirely criminal 50 years ago is now standard procedure. And we need to start pointing the, you know, finger at, you know, these judges that are permitting this thing to go on. It's unconscionable. And the way they're behaving.
Well, it starts all the way at the Supreme Court, you know.
Exactly.
When they ruled that the corporation was a human. My God, what the hell happened that day?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's why we have to do this at a local level. I mean, we get pulled over for whatever it is we're doing. Now, you know, admittedly, I think, you know, we should probably have the police continue to enforce laws against speeding because we value the safety of our children playing in the street and so on. But beyond that, you know, you have all these little offenses that we might get a minor ticket for. It's just been demonstrated to me that, you know, they're not willing to take somebody to court who might be at least bit vocal, so they may be a little quieter the next time. But, you know, get your day in court and get it out there, what's going on, and get them on record. Get them on your recorder. Call the Highway Patrol. Get your press pass. Get all your friends to join you in your efforts to make this a better world.
Well, I would contest the part about going to the Highway Patrol for a press pass, because then you're admitting, you're saying, you do have control of this situation, and they don't. The Supreme Court has already said that we don't need to go to the Highway Patrol, so why would we start?
Oh, okay. Well, you know, I'm with you there. You know, I'm just saying it used to be... That's one of the things that could protect you is you had a pass. Okay, you know, I'm recording you because, you know, it's one of those things like it's a minor thing. So you pay a little fee to get into the park. You pay $5 or whatever just to have an enjoyable day. It may not be,
right.
You know, rather than, you know, make a big issue out of something that's trivial, the Highway Patrol used to issue this pass for free. all you have to go do is go there and tell them, you know, what you're about, and this is in the public interest, and they'll give you a pass. And then
and I wonder if the pass application.
You go, and then, you know, the police have to honor it, you know. So if that worked, that worked. I don't know if it works anymore. Maybe it doesn't work anymore. I don't know.
It would be interesting to see the application, to see if somewhere in there is something written that says, but if they ask you to turn off your recorder, you got to comply.
Well, okay. That's something I want to look into for sure. And maybe I can get back to you on that. I'll figure out what the status of the California Highway Patrol press pass is now.
Yeah, the Highway Patrol has made it. They've issued a blanket statement that nobody can record them.
Hmm. Okay. If that's the case, then I think we reject that idea. So, if that and it's something that we should really, that's something that should be brought into the news. I mean, is our continuing investigation of where, you know, who is responsible for this? Ultimately, we're going to meet the devil himself.
They've just stated it. It doesn't mean it's...
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, whoever came up with the idea that you can't record police officers doing their job, you know, we've got to find out who that person is. You know, if we get down to that, then we're making progress.
So. Yeah, well, I think it'll come down to the same group of people that put the put options on 9/11.
Yeah, okay, there you go. And what about, you know, I've heard so many complaints about people on food stamps and welfare. You know, what about the $780 billion that we wrote a check to the banks that were failing, that had all of these problems, that they just got for free, you know, and with no strings attached? You know, it's like the taxpayer just wrote them a check. I mean, you know, 780 billion or was it trillion? I can't remember what.
And everybody is mad about that. My Republican friends, my Democrat friends, they're all mad, but yet their level of angst is still low enough that they would rather sit and watch TV than get up and do something about it.
Exactly, yeah. So, yeah, well, it's good to know that you're up and about and still kicking, and you gave me a lot of inspiration for getting out there and seeing seeing what I can do, you know. So I really appreciate that, Mr. Morrow.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jim. Okay. Coral, and doing what you're doing with the nuclear stuff, that is so vital right now.
Yeah, we will have more coverage of that. We have another fellow who likes him and Jim. We want to update the public on what we've observed around here, too, on the beaches. And
you're also gonna have a recording of this podcast available for people, right?
This will be available. It'll be here at Free Radio's site. You go to frsc.org, and then you'll see Archives Tangerine Dream Team Show. Once it's posted, it'll be there. And as far as I'm concerned, Morrow can use any part of this he wants.
Thank you,
Jim.
All right, thank you.
And we probably have anything left to say, except I'd like to remind people to tune into Small World Radio tonight. Its new time is at 7 o'clock, so we'll be hearing more about lots of things then.
Okay, sounds good to me.
And you know, I just want to remind everybody that all this stuff is really kind of a distraction from the extinction rate, and how fast the web of life is unraveling, and it's unraveling in our direction.
We're in the how much the extinction are we? The fifth?
They call it the sixth great extinction. Hmm. Scientists who study this thing are pretty unanimous that the rate of extinction is exceeding that of even when they believe the dinosaurs went extinct from a meteor. Hmm. And it's headed our way. The numbers keep dropping on all the populations. We've lost entire populations of key fish in the ocean. We've lost all the large fish. West African black rhino went extinct in October. We lost the Baiji in 2002, which was the smartest animal next to man. It was a very special dolphin in China. The next smartest animal to that one is in the next river over, the Yellow River, and that's under 100. There's less than 50 of the dwarf dolphins, males, left off of New Zealand. And we have similar situations going on with whales.
And, yeah, you mentioned the whales at the beginning of the show. Thank you so much for doing this, just calculating and watching all the daily. I mean, I it takes a lot for me to just today. I wasn't even sure I could even have enough strength to. You know what I mean is, you know, the moral. What is it called? The moral fortitude.
Moral fortitude.
The fiber.
Yeah, I'm the life of a party. Well, no, really, I do balance this with joy and ceremony, and you have to. I mean, I would have gone crazy a long time ago, but I'm not crazy.
And, all right. Yeah, I hope to see you soon, and I'll make a break for it.
Okay.
Yeah. everybody, keep in touch with soulcommunications.org. Is that correct?
Yep.
And for Jim's atmospheric radiation tests, alpha radiation tests, how would we contact him?
Okay. We could, if you want to go to the RAN, it's WRAN. It's a group, it's the list server for RAN Network. And it's WRAN. I should have, before I agreed to do all this, I should have. We'll have to come back and let you know how to get in touch with me. I don't like to give out my personal email over the air for obvious reasons, but let's say, here you go. Try burl.com, buryl.com, and you'll see some of the devices I help make. And if you find a way to get in touch with Burl, either through email from that website, you can get in touch with me. So it's buryl.com.
Hey, and Jim.
Yeah.
Jim, if you need a fiscal sponsor, a nonprofit umbrella, just get a hold of me. I've got my own server if you'd like free server space.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, if I can encourage you to build a website so we can all see what you're doing, I'd be happy to host it.
Yeah, well, unfortunately, the Burl website is it's a commercial enterprise, so it wouldn't be, you know, appropriate for what you have there. But, you know, if you want to include me in any of my adventures in your news reports, I'll be from time to time. In fact, I'm engaged right now in taking various readings and doing test reports or experimental descriptions and of our radiation readings and what we're finding out. So I'll be in touch with either Coral or our friend Anthony, or maybe I can send you get in touch with you through your organization, and we'll keep in touch for sure.
Well, I'll be in touch.
Okay.
All right. Lots of joy, prayers, and happiness.
Right on.
God bless.
God bless.
Take care. Bye-bye.